The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony, a very good morning to you from a dismal-looking Johannesburg.
Booker Tov for the last time in 2021.
It is, and I'm seeing some very interesting news coming out. So before we get to your inserts, I saw an article today and that the U.S. is very pleased with the Benny Gantz, Mahmoud Abbas meeting. And I didn't realize the power the defense minister had. Obviously, in a country that is on constant alert, you would know that the defense ministry is powerful. But coming out of these meetings, they're talking about a promised loan in the hundreds of millions, as well as legal status to 9,500 Palestinians. Are the Americans right to be so happy at the outcome of these meetings?
Well, I think the Americans are happy because there is a dialogue going on. And I think that this dialogue is very helpful to the U.S. administration, because in light of the lack of dialogue that went on during the Trump era, I think that it seems to me that President Joe Biden has a relatively pragmatic view of the situation. He hasn't come in saying, I'm going to change the world, I'm going to create peace in no time, I'm going to go where no man has gone, and I'm going to be successful where no one has been able to succeed over the last 70 or 80 years. He has just come in pretty quietly on this particular issue, at least, and not made any sweeping promises and not made any set any expectations. So to the extent that the Israelis are kind of helping him to create a better environment, a kind of more palatable environment, even if it might not lead to this notional Palestinian state that everybody holds up as the ultimate objective of this exercise, I think he's quite pragmatic that he doesn't see himself being the person to achieve this. But to the extent that there is dialogue, and to the extent that the Palestinians are relatively satisfied with the situation, more or less, I think it also relieves pressure on his relations with other Arab countries, with other countries around the world. It puts him in a slightly easier international diplomatic scenario. So to the extent that Benny Gantz is helping him and giving the Palestinians reason to feel more optimistic about the situation, I think it has a knock-on effect to him as well, to the U.S. administration. So that's, I think, why he's very much supporting this. Let's not forget that Benny Gantz, although he is only, in inverted commas, the defense minister, went into this meeting with the support of the prime minister, with the knowledge, I have no doubt, that they agreed their lines beforehand in terms of what Benny Gantz was willing and prepared to offer, how far he was willing to go. And the good thing out of all of this is that none of this came from the mouth of the prime minister, and so therefore he can still stand by his original statement that he is not going to meet with the Palestinian Authority and that he's not willing to make significant compromises. And really, this is all coming from Benny Gantz. But of course, behind the scenes, we know that the Prime Minister will have been involved, and that it will have been with his blessing and consent and prior knowledge that these things were offered.
And there's the reason I asked you the question, because of your insights, and you took us into the back channeling that's taking place. And I think it's all very good going into 2022 on a bit of a high. You know, with the US, they sneeze, the world catches a cold. And if we have some form of tacit endorsement, it can always help. And I like what you said about the fact that it isn't overt. They're not coming out there making promises that may be undeliverable. They're taking the cool, calm approach, and let's see what this develops into. So thank you so much for that insight. Moving on to the important topics of the day, President Isaac Herzog has spoken out saying that Israel needs to find a way to allow the diaspora Jews to visit Israel even during the pandemic. What prompted him to come out and say this at this point in time?
Well, it was an interesting comment that he made yesterday. He was speaking at an economic conference, and he was asked a question about divisive political language that is often heard in the Knesset. And then he somehow managed to drive from divisive language in the Knesset to how whatever happens in Israel radiates outwards. So I think he was trying to say that to the extent that behavior in the Knesset is inappropriate, it radiates outwards. and especially to Jews in the diaspora, and has an effect on the way that Jews in the diaspora view Israel. And then he went on to dive into this issue about diaspora Jews being allowed to visit Israel. And he has said that he's received a large number of requests from schools and from Jewish communities around the world that are struggling because they are unable to visit Israel at the time that they would dearly love to visit Israel. And they have reached out to him and to his office to see what can be done to try and change things. Now, we've already had the discussion about Chief Rabbi Warren Goldstein speaking out quite firmly, saying that he felt that this decision taken by the Israeli government to close the borders, and especially the effect that it has on diaspora Jews, is damaging to the relationship between Jews in the diaspora and Israel. And President Herzog is apparently rallying to this particular cause. He said that this is the first time in history that Israel has been closed to Jews in the diaspora. And he said that we've not closed the borders to those who wish to make Aliyah, to those who wish to come and immigrate to Israel, that Aliyah has grown over the last 2 years, but it's closed to people who have family here. And he thinks that this particular sensitivity should be taken into consideration when considering the whole issue of closing the skies or the borders and reopening the borders. It seems to me that it is only a matter of perhaps a week or perhaps even some days before that whole situation will be revised. There is already talk about trying to open up to those people who might have dual nationality. So we can see that these walls are being broken down at every possible opportunity. Now, a very much shortened list of red countries comprising only 15 countries. South Africa still happens to be one of those countries on the red list, but it seems as if that red list is disappearing very quickly. And I think that that now also seems to be the trend around the world, where people are coming to the realization that Omicron is much less medically challenging than other variants of this pandemic, and that there might be some advantage to allow Omicron effectively to take hold, to become the dominant variant within society, knowing full well that as far as risk to your health is concerned, it's very much diluted and reduced. But by closing down and trying somehow to fight it, we have run the risk of damaging the economy very significantly. And so now it seems within the era of Omicron, the economy is the thing, and the medical risk is being put to one side to some degree because it is considered to be a much, much lower risk. That's at least the impression that I'm getting, and it certainly ties in with the strategy that the Israeli government has been taking on the one hand to try and do whatever we can to limit the number of people who contract the disease. But I think we're quickly coming to the realization that almost everybody is likely to be infected. But now the word is, you know, if we don't need to protect our medical staff, our medical facilities, because they won't be overrun, then we need to really protect our economy.
Thank you for that. Moving into airspace, Israel's National Drone Initiative has entered the fourth phase of its pilot project. Tell us a little bit more about the initiative as a whole.
So this is an initiative with a goal of trying to advance the deployment of drones for public benefit in order to assist in reducing congestion on our roads, to establish a national network of airways that are effectively managed for the purpose of transporting medicines, vaccines, tests, medical equipment, retail marketing shipments, deliveries of food, and everything else in between. And the idea is just to try and take the pressure off the roads and to try and enhance and increase the speed with which these items are delivered across the country. Now, I think Israel is ideally suited for use of drones, first of all, because it's a relatively small country and drones can get across quite quickly, assuming that airspace has been dedicated for this purpose. The idea is that there will be air routes established with some sort of an overseeing authority that will police these drone air routes at a relatively low height in order to get in and out very, very quickly. And so Israel, I think, is well suited for this initiative because of the fact that it is relatively small in size. And Israel would be very welcoming of this initiative because of the massive congestion on the roads, and in particular now in the city of Tel Aviv, where there is so much construction going on because the light rail system is being dug in so many parts of the city, stations being built, underground work going on, which is also designed to take pressure off the city's streets. So this national drone initiative is already into its fourth phase of the pilot program. And this fourth phase will continue for a period of 2 weeks. And there is massive cooperation going on between various drone operators. There are a number of companies in Israel that are drone operators, and many of them are cooperating with each other in order to test out what the situation might be when these air routes have been established for the drones, to see how it can be coordinated on a central basis, to see how quickly these drones can get in and out, to see how effective the service can be, and how hot the food is when it's delivered, how safe the medical supplies are when they are picked up and delivered, and also to provide information not only for delivery purposes, but to provide information. So, for example, the Ayalon Highways Company, which manages many of Israel's highways, have also been cooperating in order to use drones in order to provide updates as to if incidents that take place on the roads, where congestion is, in order to provide real-time information. So I think this is a really exciting use of drone technology. We've already heard quite a lot and spoken quite a lot about the use of drone technology in the military sphere, which is a very, very important development. But now we're talking about drones for civilian use. The problem is that drones are still relatively unregulated at the moment. So anybody could literally buy themselves a drone and just deploy it wherever they wish without any control. And I've actually seen drones. I mean, my office is on the 13th floor, and it's not been once or twice that I've seen a drone kind of hovering outside my window, which is just some amateur drone operator somewhere on the street down the bottom, who's just having some fun using the drone with a camera in order to play around a little bit. And there is really no regulation. So the first step was to try to limit drones from entering airspace in the airport, which of course is a very big danger, and even that's been difficult to police. But I think that we're going to have to try and get some sort of regulation and control over use of drones, and it's going to be really exciting if we can actually get the services moving, which will be delivered by these drones.
Surprisingly, South Africa is a little bit ahead of the game in respect of legislation, not in terms of technology and the plans that Israel has, but in terms of the legislation, where the Civil Aviation Authority haven't taken a pronounced role and stance in respect of this. And when you look at South Africa, especially the commercial use of drones by security companies and other organizations, they have to file flight plans. There are certain no-go zones, and you don't see the amount of drones one would expect, even in the upmarket areas where every single kid has been given one as a gift. So this is fascinating. I do feel like I'm trapped in a sci-fi movie, to be quite honest with you, hearing about all these technological advances. But you know what? I think within the next 2 years, it's going to be an everyday part of our life, just like cell phones became an everyday part of our life. Now, the important part of the show, Mr. Reich, it's our last conversation of 2021. We're looking back on 2021, and today's question is, how is Israel positioned as a Jewish state?
I wanted to talk about this as our last conversation because it's a massive dilemma that increases as time goes on. When Israel was established as a Jewish state in 1948, the United Nations stood up and agreed that Israel would be established as a Jewish state. The famous partition plan of 1947 spoke about a Jewish state and an Arab state in terms of the way that the then Palestinian area, what was then called Palestine, would be divided up. The Arabs decided not to accept the proposal. the Jews decided very much to take it and surf along with it and go with it. So that was absolutely understood, and there were no issues concerning the fact that Israel would be a Jewish state. And in our independence declaration, it talks about a state for the Jews, absolutely. And we need to remember that the context then was following the dramatic tragedy that befell European Jews in the form of the Shoah. And some claim that Israel was established in the ashes of the Shoah, literally, as a Jewish state. So there was no doubt about it. As time has gone on, it has become a very sensitive political issue as to how Israel can stand up and say, this is a state for the Jews. Proudly say, this is a state for the Jews, to offer the right to return only to people from Jewish extract. And at the same time, claim to be a democratic country where everybody's rights are respected, everybody's entitled to vote, everybody's entitled to sit in the Knesset and to social benefits and everything else that Israel has to offer. How do we marry these two things together? And as our world has become much more politically sensitive and politically correct, it's becoming increasingly difficult for certain people to stand up and say, well, Israel is a Jewish country, but... and then we roll into this whole thing about apartheid. Is this linked to apartheid, the fact that Israel wants to be a Jewish country? It's a very tough and difficult conversation for some people, and I don't pretend that I'm going to be able to resolve it in everybody's minds here and now. But one of the main events during 2021 has been the statement by Mansour Abbas, who is an Arab member of Knesset. And he has finally acknowledged within the last week or two that Israel is a Jewish state and that Arabs living in the Jewish state need to understand that that is the situation, that they won't be able to change that reality, at least not for the foreseeable future. And that the job of the Arabs living in Israel is to find a way to deal with it and manage with it and live with that reality with everything else that Israel offers those who are not Jews. So my statement today is that I still firmly believe that we have every right to stand up and say we are a Jewish state and we offer certain protections to Jews because other countries don't. It's as simple as that. There is so much anti-Semitism that goes on in the world that I think that we have every justification to be able to stand up and say, in light of the persecution, anti-Semitism, call it what you will, that is evident and increasingly evident around the world, we stand firm in our statement that Jews will always have a special welcome when they come here, and that people who are not Jews will have a standard welcome, which means the same as the welcome that they would receive in any other country around the world, democratic country around the world, and probably even a little better than that. So when we judge ourselves on the international stage, I don't think that we're any worse off for those people who are not Jewish. I honestly don't believe that, but I think we do give a slight advantage to those who are Jewish when they come to live here, and I think that we can stand up and be proud of that.
Thank you for your passion, thank you for your reports, and I will speak to you again in 2022.